Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey Nathan, you know there are two new Wranglers out there, and they're very different, yet they're very similar. You know what I'm talking about?
You're talking about the 392 and the 4xe.
Yep, that's right. In this episode of TFL Talk, we're going to be talking about both of them. Tommy and I just got back from driving the new 4xe, the plug-in hybrid.
Right.
And the week before, 2 weeks before, we drove the 392. So we're going to be talking about the V8 versus the 2-liter turbo hybrid and which one is right for you. And then maybe at the end, we'll throw in some Bronco stuff just for, you know what, and grins.
Yeah, that sounds like a good idea.
All right, well, let's get right to it, dude. So let me give you some specs. I mean, lay down some numbers for you.
Lay it down.
And see what you think, all right? So we know the 392, of course, is the big old Hemi V8.
Yeah.
And there's one number you need to know, 470.
Yeah, 470, that's horsepower. 470, that's torque.
Yeah, exactly. And the other number I think that's important is 0 to 60, 4.5.
Yeah, that thing is stupid fast. Even at high elevation, it moves.
Yeah, we drag raced it against the TRX.
Yeah. And, you know, obviously the TRX is, you know, more powerful and, you know, better than whatever. But it still did really well. It didn't embarrass itself.
Yeah. If you want to watch that video, it's over at TFL Truck. The TRX remains undefeated, Nathan. Until today.
Until today. We're not going to say anything else. You're going to have to watch. And it's pretty obvious to what's about to happen. So, Roman, I had a lot of questions about the 4xe because you guys went to the event. And while you were there, I made sure that I, you know, soiled all of the fabric in both your offices because I was really upset about that. No, but in all honesty, I've been looking forward to this vehicle for a while because I want to know if they succeeded in building a fuel-efficient, somewhat electric Wrangler that can actually go off-road and be driven every day.
Yeah, you know, the last year it's been me and Tommy reviewing all these cars. That's because we can be in the same car together because
we're
kind of family. But now that COVID is starting to hopefully wane a little bit, we're going to have a lot more mixing of the team. So you'll see a lot more people, kind of not just me and Tommy together. But anyway, that's a whole different
thing.
That's a whole different thing. So let's talk about some numbers, okay?
Yeah, I am very curious.
All right, so it starts, there's three models. There's the Sahara, which is kind of the city slicker one.
Right.
Then there's the Rubicon.
Mm-hmm.
And then there is the high altitude, which is like the really fancy one.
Does it have a snorkel?
I wish it did, but no, it doesn't.
No.
And they started around, it's like 48-ish up to like 50,000. 55,000, I think, for the high altitude.
So realistically, around 50 grand.
Yeah, and basically, they're, if you compare them apples to apples, right? So if you compare a Rubicon, regular, you know, non-hybrid to the hybrid 4xe, it's like $4,000 to $6,000 difference. And of course, the reason they did that is because you get, well, $7,500 back if you, you know, qualify.
If you qualify, and it's, you know, debatable whether or not you will qualify. Here's the thing.
So it becomes a little cheaper to buy the, and it's at the dealership right now, so it's a little cheaper.
Yeah. And I think it'll eventually get less expensive as time goes on.
Now, one of the things that Jeep did, and I understand why they did it, right, is they wanted to keep the full off-road ability of the Wrangler.
Yeah. Right?
So when we went on this program, we went to Austin, Texas, and they kind of drove us in a rainstorm out to the hill country, where we got to go, you know, some water bogging. There was like up to the front fender. That's how deep we went, because they wanted
so about 2 feet.
Yeah, they wanted to show us that if the battery gets wet, it's not going to like electrocute the driver.
Right.
And then there are these big granite like mounds that we climbed up. So they wanted to show us that this thing has a full capability. So unlike many electric vehicles plug in, this thing has the full range of Wrangler goodies. So you, not only do you get 4 high and 4 auto and 2 high and 4 low, right? Plus, you get the disconnectable sway bar in the Rubicon. You get the locking front diff, locking rear diff. There's just anything you get in the regular Rubicon, you get in this one.
Okay, but there's a major question. I knew about this part, and a lot of the fans out there did. But the weight difference.
Oh, yeah. Between
now,
5
now,
and 7.
Could you tell when you were driving?
Yeah.
That's what I want to hear about.
Yeah, you know, here. Okay, so we'll talk about this later, right? But there's this weird thing that happens with plug-in hybrids, right? And that is... you know, you have the battery, which is great, and Jeep says you can go 21 miles on a full charge.
Mm-hmm.
But once you run out of battery, then you're carrying around this 500-pound battery and electric motor that's actually making fuel economy worse.
So what you're saying is that if you run it on full EV and then completely drain it, then you kind of have a boat anchor. But what if you don't run it on full like that?
Yeah, right? So there's 3 buttons on the thing, right?
Okay.
You can run it on hybrid.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, you know, using both electric motor or battery or gas engine, the 2-liter turbo. You can run it on electric. Now, think about this. The electric motor puts out about 130 horsepower. I think it's 126.
Mm-hmm.
So imagine like, you know, 6,000 plus vehicle running on 126 horsepower.
It's not going to move very fast.
No. You can imagine what that's like.
Yeah.
Or there's a button called eSave where you can actually push that button and save the battery until you get to wherever you're going off-roading, if you want.
Okay. Now, here's the really important question. And this is something...
It gets more complicated.
I'm sure it does, but I want to jump to this because I've been dying to know, and you've been holding this back from me.
Yes.
Electric motors are known for putting out maximum torque at 0 RPM.
Right.
So did you go EV mode off-road at all?
Yes.
And was it good or bad?
It was good.
Ah.
It was really good. It was quiet and torquey, and actually off-road, it works really good. So what we did was, we were like 2.5 hours out to this ranch in the hill country.
Mm-hmm.
So we put in all electric and drove it around in all electric through Austin in mm-hmm. traffic and basically depleted the battery.
Uh-huh.
The problem with that was it was pretty slow. And if you floor it, let's face it, 126 horsepower ain't going to get you out of the way of a semi. So
right.
the motor... And the engine kick in at the same time.
Right, because it knows it needs extra
right.
power and it goes.
Right.
Right.
And then there's this other kind of cool feature, and that is you could put it into a mode, and it's not one of the 3 buttons, it's on the little display, where you could have it actually charge the battery while you're driving.
So in other words, it shuts off the electric, everything, and then the gas engine is...
It doesn't shut it off. It's just using some of the gas engine's power to charge the battery.
That's what I'm saying. So
but
like
here's,
a generator.
But here's the kicker. Mm. All right, there's a kicker. Guess how much power we regen after we killed the electric motor driving on the highway. It was like 65, 70, you know, for 2 hours to get to the off-road area from a dead battery. It's never really dead, but, you know.
Yeah, yeah. 30%?
4%.
40%?
4%.
Oh, 4%.
4%. F-O-U-R.
4%. 4%.
Yeah, that's all we regen using. And I asked the engineer about that.
Uh-huh.
And basically the answer is there's no such thing as a free lunch. And what I mean by that is, so at 75, right, what's keeping it from actually regenning the battery is that you've only got so much emissions and catalysts that you can use to keep the car within its, you know, range where it doesn't pollute.
All right, gotcha.
Right, and at like 35 miles an hour, you can use the electric, you can use a motor then to supplement, you can use the engine, sorry, you can use the engine to supplement the power that's going not just to the wheels, but also as a generator to charge up the battery, because you've got enough catalysts left, right? You've got enough like emissions left.
So what you're saying, to break it down, is that if you're going at regular traffic speed, slow traffic, 35,
right,
you're actually able to charge that battery quicker.
Right.
More charge is getting into
right,
it.
Right, but think about what you're doing. You're burning more gas.
You're burning more gas in order to do it. So
exactly.
It's a trade-off. But see, the whole point of this car...
Yeah, there's no such thing as a free lunch.
But you can pull up. Do they have one of those portable chargers?
They did. That's a very good question. So they're installing these solar power chargers. Some are solar, some are into the grid. Right? They're these big, like... charging stations with these big solar panels on the roof, and then
that like tilt a battery, in the direction
they,
where the sun
they
is.
They follow the sun, and they're installing them in the Badge of Honor trails. Those are the little badges that people put on their side of their Jeep, you know, like the Rubicon Trail, Big Bear, and Moab, you know, bins and things.
Yeah, there's like five in Utah alone. There's like seven in Colorado.
So they're putting these their level two chargers at these trailheads so that you can charge it up.
Right. Now, by the way, we have a story on that on TFLoffroad.com, so go check that out. It gives you all the details. The thing about these chargers, first of all, there's, I believe, two ports.
There's two for two vehicles to charge up, yeah.
So, okay, let's say you get to the trailhead and you have 4% on your battery.
Right.
All right, and you want that extra charge because you want to do some off-roading using the
electric,
both, yeah. Right. So you plug it in. How long does it take to charge?
A level two, it's 2.5 hours, and it doesn't have quick charging.
Okay, so 2.5 hours, and that's from near dead, which is 4%.
So that's the fastest. That's the fastest it's ever going to charge up. If you plug it into the wall, it's 12.5 hours.
Right.
I want to say it's a 17 kilowatt hour battery. Don't quote me on that. I could be wrong, but it's around 20 kilowatt hours. It's pretty small compared to like a Tesla, which would be like 75.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, like even, a Model Y.
My Nissan has a 30 kilowatt hour battery.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
But the thing is that now this is what fascinates me. You can plug it in.
Yeah.
Okay. 2 hours, which is great because most off-roaders want to go out and drink, which they shouldn't, and do things for a couple hours, eat barbecue, and then come back to their vehicle, use the lavatory 6 or 7 times. By then, 2.5 hours have passed, you have a full battery. Okay.
Yes.
Now that you have a full battery, right, and you have, let's say, 3/4 of a tank of gas,
right,
what's your range?
Officially, the range is 360 miles with a full battery and a full gas tank. Uh-huh. They made the gas tank a little bit smaller because hybrids have to have it pressurized.
Yeah, that's right.
For emissions requirements. So they say 360. I think realistically, if you get 300, you'll be doing well.
Mm. You know? Okay, so it's the same as getting the V6, the regular one.
Yeah, exactly.
Or 300.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. And the other thing that's a little confusing, and I got to tell you this, people are super confused about electric cars and how they work, right? So, you know, Tesla has its own proprietary charging network called the superchargers, right? And you cannot plug a Tesla charger into a non-Tesla. There's no converter you can use. There's no dongle. A Tesla only works with a Tesla.
Okay.
Because the reason for that is because there's a lot more going on when you plug the electric car. And it's not just like, hey, I need a dongle to convert like this hole that's square into a hole that's round.
Mm-hmm.
There's a handshake that has to happen. The charger has to
talk. They got to talk to each other.
Yeah. And Teslas don't talk to anybody else. They just talk to themselves.
What a surprise.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, because you got to charge, you know,
Elon
Musk battery has to have a credit card hooked up to it. So
I get that. But the charge network around the country, non-Tesla charge networks are growing rapidly.
Right. So there's a CCS charger, which is level two.
Mm-hmm.
There's a CHAdeMO, which you would have on your Leaf.
Yeah,
And then there's a high-speed charger. I forget the name of it, but it's basically a CCS, plus it's got two, like, DC.
Yeah, that's super fast.
That's super fast. So those
level
are supercharging.
Yeah.
So I was, you know, the 4xe is already at the dealers, and there's just a lot of confusion because we were watching a TikTok video where a guy had bought the 4xe, mm-hmm. taken it to an Electrify America station, to a fast charger, not a Tesla supercharger, but a Electrify America fast charger, and he was like, hey, how do I get this thing to work with my Jeep? And the problem is the Jeep doesn't have fast charging, so there's no way you can plug that Electrify America fast charger into the Jeep. It just
right. You have
work.
To use the J20, A1720.
Yeah, something like that. J something is
a, right. So the regular one that comes with all regular electric cars, you have to use that regular charger.
Right.
You can't use the higher end one, which is the fast charger.
And as far as I know, there's only one hybrid, plug-in hybrid, that does have fast charging, and that's the Mitsubishi Outlander.
Yeah.
That's the only one. Don't ask me why. It's the only one. Anyway, so the guy's like, hey, I can't plug my new 4xe in. What do I do? And so me and Tommy were reading the comments. And you know what the number one comment was that people people said? Go get yourself a Tesla dongle.
Really?
Yeah. That was number one.
And even though that will be ineffective.
There's no such thing. It doesn't. It's not about a dongle. It's about.
Yeah, about them talking to each other.
Yeah, okay. So there's so much confusion about that. So basically, you cannot fast charge the 4xe. The fastest you'll be able to charge it is, you know, using
2.5 hours.
Yeah, 240. Yeah, you know, like a level 2 charger. Okay. No level 3.
Now, a lot of Jeep guys out there, a lot of guys who are into Wranglers are not really savvy when it comes to the whole electrify thing.
Exactly, yeah.
So they're probably wondering about this. So simply put, my level 2 charger at home, what I basically did is I got a converter to plug right into my dryer outlet.
Yeah.
And I ran that outside and I'm able to plug my car in.
And you can do that with the Jeep.
That's exactly it. So you can do that and that'll give you 2.5 hours.
Right. From
empty. Fill it up and around 20 miles is what they say.
Exactly.
All electric. Now.
And by the way, the EPA rates it at 49 MPGe, which is miles per gallon equivalent.
But that's pretty good. But that's the equivalent. It's not really getting.
So what we got, you want to know what we got? What number we got?
30.
No, 21.
Okay. Why?
Because, you know, our battery wasn't completely charged. So when we left the off-road area, we didn't have a completely charged battery. And this is the downside to plug-in hybrids, right? Once that battery is dead, dude, right, you are carrying around 500 pounds of extra weight.
And you're relying on the vehicle to not only charge the battery but move you. I had a real problem with that way back when I was driving the Chevy Volt. Remember, when you deplete that battery completely, you're relying on the gas engine and it slows everything down. It goes into like a limp home mode.
Yeah, yeah. But so the Jeep has that little 2-liter turbo, right, which you can also get. And so that engine is plenty powerful. So, it won't be quite as lively, but you're not going to feel a lot of degradation.
Is it e-torque like we had in our Jeep?
This doesn't have e-torque.
Which is a good thing because that e-torque is what went wrong with the Jeep.
Right, right. It doesn't have e-torque because it's got the full DC battery. Right?
I was just curious. I don't know. They left it in there.
Yeah. So it's not like the Volt where, you know, it once the battery's dead, or like even like the BMW i3, right? Once the battery's dead, and if you're using the little Rex, it just doesn't have any power. This is fine. You won't notice much degradation.
So that's good because it's the drivetrain's all hooked up and everything else.
Yeah. So the way it works is basically you've got the 2-liter turbo, right? Uh-huh. And then you've got the full set of normal transmission that you would get in a regular Wrangler, and then sandwiched in between that is an electric motor.
So similar to what Ford does with their setup, you have that electric motor sitting right there between the transmission and the engine.
Exactly. Yeah. So right. It can add power or it can, be used to boost the amount of torque. So when you have a fully charged battery, 0 to 60, 6.5 seconds. It's quick.
It's pretty quick. Yeah. It's quicker than a regular V6.
Yeah, yeah. It's probably the second quickest Wrangler out there. Not as quick as a 392. Which
not even close.
4.5, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But still, that's something to be said about that. Actually, at high elevation with that little turbo, that would be a relatively quick Jeep compared to other ones. So the question I think it all boils down to, so it is off-road capable. It does well off-road.
Yes.
Theoretically, it could get good mileage if you do everything right.
If you come home and you plug it in at night and you fully charge the battery, and you get 21 miles of electric range, and then you go to work and it's 21 miles, you could run that thing theoretically without ever turning on the gasoline engine.
Right.
Unless you floor it, in which case the gasoline engine will turn on. But there's a lot of, there's just a lot going on. It kind of made me wonder why they just didn't the amount of software and programming and, technology that's in this thing is mind-blowing. I just kind of wondered why they didn't just forgo all the 4-high, 4-low, and just go to an electric Jeep.
Well, I guess that's the next question because you and I actually drove.
We did, the Magneto, yeah.
Yeah, and yeah, granted it was a little rough around the edges.
And it's a prototype.
It's a prototype, concept prototype. And the thing is that it proved that it could work, right?
Yeah, but Stellantis only has 2 electrified vehicles, right?
Mm-hmm.
Former FCA, they've got the Pacifica. And now they've got this.
And they're very different vehicles. They use very different technology. The Pacifica is a front-wheel drive only minivan, whereas
right.
And this is a four-wheel drive, very different powertrains and all that. But the thing is that this powertrain sounds like it's moving around now. It's going to actually wind up in other vehicles.
It might.
Yeah, I think it will. And it makes sense because in order to get your return on your investment, you need to share the goods.
Plus, you don't have to buy credits from Tesla.
That's the other thing. But, I mean, this vehicle was starting, they started the design of this powertrain pre-Stellantis.
Yeah, oh, for sure.
Yeah,
for sure.
This is the FCA days where they wanted, and they made a promise. They said not only are they going to build a plug-in hybrid, which they've now done, they said that they would have an all-electric Wrangler.
I mean, the issue, of course, is that you're driving probably the least, from a design point of view, fuel-efficient vehicle on the planet, and try to make it go far on a battery, right? So most electric cars obviously are very aerodynamic.
Yeah.
The Wrangler's not. It's a brick into the wind, right?
It's, yeah, but it's still awesome, and so that's okay for it not being aerodynamic.
Most electric cars have some kind of low rolling resistance tires.
Yeah, this doesn't.
No, this has full-on ATs. Let's get the Rubicon.
Which is great. Well, what they're trying to do is they're trying to give you good fuel mileage, a green vehicle that has a low carbon footprint, yet you could still take it off-road. I think that would be the argument,
and then
right?
If people are watching this, look over Nathan's shoulder, you can see the electrified Wrangler. They've gone with the electric blue accents, right? So you can see it around the hood.
Yeah, the tow hooks are blue, which means exactly. That's really important because that means good something, because it really doesn't get that crazy.
It is weird. Like, so I'll tell you what happened, right? Oh, so yeah. We ford this like river where we're pretty deep, you know, like 2, maybe 2.5 feet.
Mm-hmm.
Battery's fine. And by the way, the battery lives inside the cabin underneath the rear seat.
Underneath the rear seat, yeah.
So you're losing a little bit of, like, when you fold those rear seats down, they're a little bit taller because mm-hmm. that's where the battery lives now.
Yeah, I was told, though, that in terms of weight distribution, it works really well.
Yeah, it could. I don't know. I didn't get that part.
It's that Mark also, Allen told me that.
It's also climate control of the battery, so they cool it so that, you know, it lives within that kind of efficient space so that
that's really
it's happy.
Good. My Nissan doesn't do that.
Yeah, at all. Air cooled, yeah. Yeah, yours is air cooled. That is
yeah, not it's just, it's like, if it's cold outside, you're screwed.
Yeah, so it lives kind of where people like to live, you know. But it does take up a little bit of space. Now, the one thing, like I said, the cool part about it is so we're climbing these like massive granite, I call them little baby hills, right? But they're still very steep and very kind of jaggedy and sharp. And when you're doing it in all electric mode, it's really weird because you don't have the engine. All you have is kind of, you hear the whirling of the air conditioner fan. That's the loudest thing that you hear if the air conditioner is running, which it was because it's hot in Texas.
And it'll just go. It'll just go right up.
It will go, but we were like the third group to go up there, and we had gone through the water, and then they got mud on these granite rocks, and then they got very slippery, and some of them really struggled to crawl their way up. And I have to be honest here, Nathan, I can't help but think that additional 500 to 600 pounds of weight didn't make that much easier, right? Because you're going up a hill and you've got all this weight pulling you back down the hill.
What's the one thing, I mentioned Mark Allen earlier, the head designer of Jeep, what's the one thing that he says that you need to get rid of on any Jeep to make it good?
The headlights.
No, weight. Remember he drilled that into our heads.
Yeah.
Get rid of the weight, get rid of the weight. And what have they done? They've added the weight and they have no choice. There's no other way to make a PHEV other than adding batteries and adding weight. I mean, at least they put the straight 4 in there, which is, I guess, lighter than a V6, right?
Yeah, and the great news is, in most states, you get a 10-year, 100,000-mile battery warranty.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, in some states, like California and Michigan, you get 15-year.
Ooh, yeah.
So you are getting a lot. And then you are getting, like in Colorado, let's say you're getting the Rubicon, which is like around 50K. You're getting not only the fact that you can run around on electricity, and the fact that they also like up content the 4xe. Mm. So like a regular Ruby doesn't come standard with the LEDs. That one up there does.
Mm-hmm.
So they give you more content. And then Colorado, you get, I think it's 7.5 federal and 2.5 state. So you're up to $10,000 off that price. So if it's 50K, it's really 40K if you're qualified.
Although it's not as if they're giving you cash in your pocket. You have to understand.
You have to actually have enough revenue and income to.
There's a whole bunch of other stuff there, which we're not going to go over right now. But here's, I guess the bottom line is, do you think it's worth the money?
Oh, that's a good question. Tommy and I spent 2.5 hours trying to think of like who's going to buy this, right?
I know who, by the way. You keep talking, though.
All right. So I'd love to get your opinion on this. So we came back with like this could be a good Jeep for fleets. So if you're a company and you certainly qualify for that tax rebate, and then you want to wear your green credentials or your electric blue credentials on your sleeve, right? Think of like companies that do a lot of, environmental kind of stuff. It would be a good vehicle for fleet sales.
What about like Forest Service?
Exactly. That's another one. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's another fleet sales potential. Whether, you know, a regular guy or gal will buy it over, you know, the cheaper in some ways, but less contented, Rubicon, I'm not sure, Nathan. I'm just not sure. In Europe, they've gotten to the point where now a lot of these plug-in hybrids are going away because, once again, there's no such thing as a free lunch. So you do get electric power and you do get good fuel efficiency as long as the battery is charged up. So, you know, you can look at it two ways, right? The glass is half empty or the glass is half full.
Right.
If you charge it up at home every night, the glass is half full. It's great. You can run it without using your 2-liter turbo at all. Or it can go the exact opposite way. You know, you may never charge that thing up, in which case you're carrying around a boatload of weight for no reason.
Okay. So now I'm going to throw a couple things at you all in this diatribe, which is going to last like 2 minutes.
Okay.
First of all, I really think that this type of powertrain should also go into the Gladiator. That would make an even better Forest Service vehicle in terms of, you know, because I don't think it's going to suck up that much more fuel, and there's more space for a larger battery. Something to think about, possibly. All right. My best friend is a tech freak. He lives in San Francisco, and he's always wanted a Wrangler, but he never could substantiate the idea of getting a Wrangler, driving back and forth to work, which is 10 miles each way, and then being able to go off-road and go skiing and everything else. He is willing to spend 50, 60 grand on a, you know, ridiculous money on a Jeep, but he keeps coming back to that whole thing. He lives in this really green city where you have to wear it on your sleeve.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's part of like almost a fashion statement. And at the same time, he wants that mileage. Now, 10 miles from work, even though he's got hills, he's in, you know, literally in the middle of San Francisco, I think he, and he has a charger at work, yes, just like we do. And he can get to work, charge that vehicle up, get home, charge that vehicle up. In other words, he's not really using the engine or the gas engine. Hence, he's saving a lot of money and he's actually doing his environmental thing. Then, on the weekend, he's taking his Jeep and occasionally going skiing or doing some actual off-roading, which you can do in California. So he is an ideal customer for this Jeep because he's willing to spend that extra dough because he wants that moniker of, hey, I'm driving a green Jeep.
Yeah, I think you made a really good point, Nathan. I mean, you know, there are some other downsides. It's hugely complicated, so chances of it breaking are probably higher.
Slightly higher than a regular one.
Yeah, there's a, you know, especially in this year, the first one's out there, so there's a lot of complexity to it. But Jeep says they drove it like 39 billion miles or something to prove that it's all good. It is, you know, it does have all the virtues of a regular Wrangler, so it's a convertible,
mm-hmm.
right, which is great, you know.
You can take the top off.
Yeah, it's going to be unstoppable in the snow. It's going to be really uncomfortable in some ways because, you know, Jeeps have that kind of straight up windshield. And for me, at least for a big guy, I should say Jeep Wranglers, right? I can never get that seat far enough back. I love the Wrangler, but it's got one of the worst seats in all of car.
See, I don't mind it too much, but also you got much longer legs than I do. I have stubby legs and a long torso. You have a short torso. Your legs are like a giraffe's.
Yeah, I just never fit in the thing. I can never get that seat far enough back.
Yeah. Now here's the thing. Quick question on this. This pricing, 50 grand roughly is where it starts. Isn't that about the same as the diesel?
Yeah. You get so that's a good point. So now, look, I mean, let's talk about the Wrangler lineup. Holy cannoli, right?
It's crazy.
Yeah, we talked about the Bronco. Bronco is going to come in with, you know, I think, what, two engine choices, right?
Two engine choices, two transmission choices. Really, one, because you can only get the manual with the four-cylinder.
And we're not talking about the Bronco Sport. Now we're talking about the big boy.
Yeah, just the big Bronco.
Yeah, the Bronco.
The one that competes with the Wrangler.
Yeah. So the Wrangler, it starts at, what, the 3.6, which is, you know, I've been doing a lot of thinking about the 3.6. I think it's going to be one of those iconic engines like the 4-liter. It's just been in everything.
I have no problem with that.
That thing is, you know,
the Pentastar is, you know, argue with me if you want, guys. I know a lot of guys who've got 200,000 miles plus on the Pentastar with no major issues.
I agree. They're in every FCA and now Stellantis product, and they've earned their reputation of being very reliable.
One of their better engines, I should say that.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, you've got that one, which is the base one, basically. Mm-hmm. Then you got the 2-liter turbo.
Right.
Right. Then you've got the diesel.
Mm-hmm.
Then you got the 4xe, and then you got the 392. That's five different engine powertrain configurations.
Five different powertrains.
Wow.
But the thing is that there are some caveats to that. Now, first of all, the only manual transmissions you can get is with the V6.
Yep.
And then the only way you can get some of these powertrains are with certain configurations of the Jeep.
And
like the 396 you can only get with the unlimited four-door.
Yeah, and this one's also only a limited four-door.
I think that's because of space.
Yeah, for the battery. So you can't get a manual and you can't get the two-door. And let's talk about the 392. So that one's also out there. So you've got kind of got bookends, right? You've got the one that's got the worst fuel economy.
Yeah, it's pretty awful. Although we did okay.
We did. I think what did we get like? I want to say 16.
No, Tommy got like didn't he get like 17 or something?
Maybe 17. Yeah, it's up there on our channel. So take a look at it. We did a fuel economy run.
Yeah.
And then you've got you know the 4xe, which you know potentially can get as much as you want to charge it, right? And then everything in between. So the problem, of course, with the 392 is it starts at, what, $73,000. So it's basically $20,000 more.
Yeah, it's a lot more expensive. And what you're getting is
a V8.
You're getting a V8, but you're getting more horsepower, but about the same torque.
Yeah, exactly the same torque. So 2 seconds quicker, 0-60. But
which is significant.
But I think, you know, but you're also getting that glorious V8 sound.
And that thing is a sledgehammer. And also keep in mind, That's not a regular Jeep. They actually did a lot to upgrade that vehicle to accept that 392, right?
Yeah. They raised it a little bit because it's so heavy in the front. They've got that little button which lets you change the exhaust note.
Oh, which I love.
Yeah, that's a
I
good
love
button.
That thing on all day long. Yeah,
the little raccoon button.
The frame has been updated in certain spots. Yeah, the hood made
stronger.
Yeah, everything about that thing has been upgraded in order to accept and make that thing work. And that it is an absolute blast to drive in the sand, probably a lot more so than this.
Oh, yeah, and they both tow the same.
No kidding, 3,500 pounds?
Yeah, exactly.
So no matter what, if it's four-door, it's 3,500 pounds.
Yeah.
What's crazy is that the diesel is the same, which drives me crazy.
And diesel's also in that same category, right,
with
the torque.
Well, so diesel's really efficient, though.
So here's the thing, right? If you want a Wrangler and you want to upgrade it, which many people do, right? It's like a Harley. It's the most
kind of customizable
vehicle. Yeah. And the parts are cheap, right? There's companies like out there, out the door, that are doing bumpers and shock absorbers and lights and you name it.
Armor.
There's just tons of it. And at the end of the day, you know, bigger tires and wheels make any Wrangler look better.
They do.
Yeah. And then you need more torque, right? And so what you end up having to do if you bought a regular Pentastar and you put on, let's say, like 39s, which is not uncommon, pull the fenders off, then you ended up being basically torque limited.
Yeah.
But with these vehicles with 450-ish pound-foot of torque, you've got no issues.
470 with the big one.
Yeah,
well, I've said it before.
You can roll those big-ass tires.
Well, if you look at a lot of guys who actually go out and modify their vehicles, one of the first things they'll do is they'll pull out. I mean, for the guys who want to spend the money, they'll put a crate engine in there, right? And everything from a 350 from a GM product to, you know, very 4.7, you know, 5.7.
The SRT,
SRT engines.
Yeah, the six.
And we've seen them. We've actually seen them in person. And most of those vehicles go for well over 100,000 miles. $100,000 once they've been modified. So if you look at the way that you get this 392 for between $73,000 and $79,000, it's sort of a bargain for all of the tech you get with the fact that you also get a warranty with it.
And it doesn't matter. All that doesn't matter. Four or five powertrains, all kinds of different configurations. People still are losing their crap over the Bronco because it's new and it's different.
And it is new and different. And, you know, we finally got to see one in person. I got to say, it's a lot bigger in person than
they do have a lot of road presence.
Yeah, it's just a big vehicle. And it looks really, really good with those big fat tires on it and the good lift. It looks fantastic. Now, the thing is, I've seen it in the sand. We've seen it, you know, pictures and video of it going over.
We got invited to go drive it.
Oh, we did?
Yeah, Andre and Tommy are going.
Wonderful. That's going to be great.
Yeah.
Got to make sure that they both go to the same tattoo parlor because I want to make sure they both get the, yeah. So the thing is that vehicle, I think, is the only competitor to Wrangler. Now that Wrangler has all these extra powertrains, it's not quite a competitor. It needs more powertrains in order to be competitive again.
Yeah.
Before it even came out.
I mean, here's the thing, right? First year production on the Bronco is sold out.
Mm-hmm.
So if you wanted to get one right now, you'd be looking at, you know, next year.
2023 at this point. I mean, well, everything's delayed because chips and all this other stuff and COVID.
Yeah. I mean, I think Ford has, you know, a huge hit on their hands. As long as, you know, they don't mess up the rollout. And let's face it, they've done that with the Explorer.
That was a disaster.
They kind of sort of did it with the F-150, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, if they can keep their eye on the ball, I think they're going to have a huge hit. So get this. So, you know, we're in Moab, right, for the Easter Jeep Safari, and we go to the little, like, expo, and right next door to the expo, this is the Easter Jeep Safari. Ford has set up a bunch of Broncos where you can go and drive them.
Yep.
Right? And obviously they're going to get a lot of interest because it's all these Jeepers out there.
Sure. All these off-roader guys who are interested.
And I went and walked around it. I didn't take, with our interesting relationship with Ford, I guess I could have jumped in one and, you know, gone and...
Other people did,
but I didn't want to do that.
Which totally makes sense. Well, we weren't there on their dime that day.
Exactly, we were there. Jeep and invited us, and I thought it would have been rude and unprofessional, so we just walked around.
But
I did talk to a bunch of people who were eyeing them up, and there were a lot of people who really had like a lot of like lust in their eyes when they saw these things.
Well, one of the things that Ford did I haven't even sat in one yet. You know, the Bronco Nation like looked at me when I came near one.
And let's keep in mind the Bronco Nation, unlike the Jeep stuff, right, is not organic. That is Ford's advertising agency
trying to create
like an organic. I'm doing air quotes here.
Yeah, it's which
owner club.
That in itself is something worth being debated. But the thing is that the interior design on the Bronco, I think, is superior to Jeeps. It looks like adjustability is better. For almost all passengers, it looks like the rear seats are more comfortable. I've been told they are. You know, we have pretty good sources who've already driven and sat in one of these. And for the most part, in terms of everything, they looked at Jeep and they said, how can we do better with A, B, C, and D? And I think that they managed to do it in a place that counts where a lot of people forget. The interior.
So there was this Instagram post where some sheik in, I don't know, United Arab Emirates already got theirs.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Ford is already building them and they're giving them to priority customers. So the first build are priority customers, and that would be like the dealerships each get one, I think, as a demo. And then the next build are the launch editions. Those are coming soon.
Which are the top, really expensive ones.
Yeah. And then I think we're going on the first drive in June, at the beginning of June, or Andre and Tommy are going. And I suspect at that point they already have those, you know, priority vehicles at dealerships.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a bummer that we don't get to the vehicle before it gets to the dealerships. But the thing is that you're going to be lucky if you even get to go near one, much less drive one, by the time we've managed to drive one. Because let's face it, these things have already sold out.
Yeah.
So they're not going to be sitting around for very long. In fact, I believe that...
Oh, dude, people are selling, get this, people are selling their reservations. Like if you have a first edition.
With markups.
With markups for like $15,000 over just for, and I don't think that's legal. I think Ford, when you sign up for one, they say you have to take delivery of it.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you can actually legally sell your reservations, but people are certainly giving it, you know, a try.
Trying it, yeah.
So yeah, it's probably the hottest new vehicle in America this year.
I think so. I'm really bummed for Ford that they weren't able to deliver them initially when they wanted to deliver them with everything going on, COVID and the chips shortage and all that stuff. Because let's face it, one of the most important things that we see is competition. When you have competition, it forces you to up your game. And it's not just Jeep. It's also Toyota. Toyota's going to have to do some stuff because...
With the 4Runner, exactly.
I mean, the 4Runner and whatever else they're going to have that comes putting along has to be competitive with these vehicles. Maybe even Nissan, who knows? It's so...
that'd be cool.
I know, don't hold your breath.
A new Xterra came out. So here's the thing, right? I think that supply and demand will catch up probably sooner than later.
Mm-hmm.
Why I suspect that is I was driving by a local Ford dealership and I saw three Bronco Sports parked in front already.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't all that long ago that you couldn't get your hands on a Bronco Sport, the baby Bronco.
Yeah, not only that, they actually permitted selling the one...
The demo model.
Demo model, which because there was such demand, but it's now starting to die down a little bit.
I mean, if there's three of them sitting in front of the dealership, I don't think those are sold. I think they're for sale.
Which is good and bad. It's good for the consumer, but it also means that people are starting to kind of mellow out a little bit. And also, a lot of people who are buying Bronco Sports were getting impatient waiting for the big Bronco.
So there's a couple things that are, you know, looming on the horizon, which are going to, I think, affect sales of both the Wrangler and the Bronco. And maybe the Wrangler is a little bit better positioned. First, right now, the economy, after being dormant, what, for a year and a half, right, is starting to pick up. And unless the politicians really screw it up, it's going to start booming.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's just a lot of pent-up demand for people to travel, for people to buy stuff, right? People,
yeah.
I think people feel like, maybe it won't be like the 20s, but they feel like, hey, we survived this thing. What are we saving up for? Let's go and live life.
Yeah.
And that could mean buying, you know, like RVs you can't buy, rooftop tents you can't buy.
Yeah.
All that stuff is completely sold out. But what does a booming economy mean for gas prices?
Well, we've already seen it starting to go up. It's already starting to move in that direction. As a matter of fact...
They're already at $3.
Yeah, here in Colorado, we were well under two, or well under $3, and now we're over $3 for.
Yeah, I just drove to Moab. We just drove to Moab for a Jeep Truck Challenge,
right?
And we were paying $3.50 a gallon.
Now, granted, there are some places where they absolutely nail you.
Yeah,
but the point is, and then if you're in California, the prices are starting to creep past $4. In some spots.
Or I'm sure in California, easily into fives.
Well, it can be downtown San Francisco once again, which is once again another good reason to have something that actually you can plug in and drive around on electricity.
So what happens when gas gets inevitably to $4 or $5 a gallon, which it will, and you've got all these like crazy, unaerodynamic, you know, unfuel efficient Wranglers and Blazers and, well, I should say the Blazers.
You buy diesel.
By diesel.
Well, you can with Jeep.
And, Broncos and Forerunners running around. I think it's going to take some of the shine off the Apple. I think people are going to be like, holy cow, I want that Bronco. But, you know, when you have to pay $75 to fill it up, which is a realistic possibility, you know, that hurts, Nathan.
We've gone to fuel pumps recently where we literally could not fill up our truck because it stopped at $75. And this is now. I mean, a year from now, who knows?
If you can afford a $50,000+ car without having to like mortgage your life for the next 72 months, then you probably aren't going to be too worried about, you know, $75 worth of gas.
Although it becomes a pain in the neck.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. And the other thing is that, you know, right now there's some government assistance towards being green, but it sounds like there's going to be a lot more in the near future. They're pushing for a lot of stuff.
Yeah, the Biden administration seems to be
going that direction, right? So the question is, what happens to these vehicles? Once again, Jeep is in a pretty good position right now because they're pushing a lot of PHEVs. We know for a fact that they're looking at their other vehicles and testing them.
And we don't know the fuel economy. I don't think it's been announced on the Bronco yet, but that 2.7, which is the big motor, right?
Right.
Twin turbo. I mean, it's, you know, it's that old Eco or Boost, one or the other. You can't have both.
Right, exactly. So we don't know for sure what that is. But the Bronco's going to still be, I'd imagine the EcoBoost four-cylinder will get better mileage than the V6.
Yeah.
By a pretty good margin.
So I think, you know, in the next 6 months, you're probably going to see a lot of used Wranglers on the market.
Possibly.
Right? Because people are going to want to change just because. But then at some point, I think the die-hard Jeepers, right, the guys who have been with Jeep since the World War, are probably going to stick with Jeep.
How was that war, by the way? The thing is, okay, but I agree with you, but I also disagree. I think that a lot of people, Jeep is really good about bringing people into the fold.
Yeah.
And, you know, you start with a really inexpensive little Jeep like the Renegade, and you work your way up. Eventually, the dream, the brass ring is to get to the Wrangler. And I think that if they keep these options, and they're probably going to have to get rid of the diesel soon. I think we all see the writing on the wall with that one.
There's some real issues politically with that one. It's dead engine walking.
We don't think it's going to last much longer. No. But if you can get one now, then you get really good range. The thing is, I got to stop saying that.
Yeah, you got me saying it.
Sorry, my fault. One thing to consider is that, unlike Ford, Jeep already has these products, and Jeep is already poised, in the near future, they say, to have an all-electric Wrangler that can go off-road. Their words.
Yeah, right? You know, so this is the interesting part, right? We know that this year we're going to have the Rivian. We're going to have...
Maybe. Come on, Rivian.
We're gonna have, you know, at least the first serious look at the prototype or the close production Cybertruck.
Yeah, maybe.
Right. We've already seen the Hummer.
We know that's happening.
Yeah, that's running around out there. So the question is, did Jeep, you know, do a little too little too late? I would have loved, like I say, to have seen I was listening to the engineer, and he's a great guy. Really enjoyed him, and he was telling me all the complexity. You know how hard it is to get, like, think about the three different drive modes, plus the mode where you can regen power, plus the fact that you've got a traditional transmission with two high, four low,
the lockers,
four auto,
front and rear.
Yeah, you know, I mean, that's just a lot, you know, and all those different gears and gear combinations to get that electric motor and the engine working together is extremely complicated.
I'm sure it is.
That's why it makes a 392 look like, you know, like a walk in the park.
Right.
So I just kind of scratched my head, and I thought to myself, man, just go electric. Just go all electric.
But this is the stepping stone, perhaps. Yeah. So if they have this vehicle, and they have the EPA ratings that are decent, and it's one thing that Stellantis desperately needs is better EPA ratings. They've been paying millions of dollars every year in fines.
To Tesla. They've been buying Tesla credits.
Well, they've had to.
Yeah.
They've had no choice. But see, we know the Hellcats are all going away. We know the big Hemis are going away, and it's not that long. Here's an important point about Stellantis. PSA, which is Peugeot, they're coming in to our country with a bunch of very efficient electric and partially electric setups.
Oh, dude, I'm terrified for Jeep. I really am.
Well, yeah, it could be. But this vehicle works, though, right?
So here's my kind of take on under the Germans, right? You know, Chrysler was owned by the Germans.
They
didn't give a rat's, right? They were like, here's an old chassis, make something of it, and the Crossfire was born.
Well, not just the Crossfire, but also they built the Grand Cherokee on an old Jeep platform or on an old Daimler platform.
Right, remember,
and they built the Challenger and Charger on an old Mercedes platform.
Yeah.
So, and they made it work.
Yeah, So like they were pretty much hands off, right? And then they went to Cibrus, I think, which was an investment fund.
That's like 5 minutes.
Right. That was like, and then they sold it to Fiat. And then Sergio, who was Italian but Canadian Italian, understood America, understood the market, and he got the fact that we want big trucks and we love, you know, he understood that the two brands that they bought that were the most valuable were Jeep because it's got such a loyal following, and of course Ram because it had such a,
and because of that he put a lot of money into those, and which was a good thing, and their content.
I'm not sure he put a lot of money. So,
yeah, he did.
So, dude, here's the. I keep saying here's the thing. Yeah. Enough of that, Roman. Here's what I believe. Right,
okay.
Jeep and Ram are like printing money. And basically, those two brands supported this invasion of, let's face it, pretty mediocre Italian cars that came to America.
Yeah, so, I can't argue with that.
Right, so like Tesla, you know, they're doing well now, and they're reinvesting that money into Tesla. But with Jeep money, it went into Fiat, it went into Alfa Romeo, it went into Maserati.
Well, yeah.
Instead of going into Jeep and building a freaking electric Jeep.
Well, no, I mean, see, I just
see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know what you mean, but it takes a while to develop something. You just heard about the complexity.
Yeah, but they didn't. They took the money and they gave it to the other brands.
Well, they had to do a little bit of both.
So now
but they're still reinvesting in
the. So now the question is, what are the French going to do? Right. My biggest fear, dude, is that at some point in the next year and a half, the French are going to come in here and then they say, well, we need a more fuel efficient Wrangler. Let's make a front wheel drive Wrangler. If we see a front wheel drive Wrangler, I'm just gonna shoot myself in the head.
Okay, and I'll film that so we can get some good views.
Right? Come on.
No, it would be horrible.
Completely off the reservation.
But for as a business case, you got to think of these
guys. And solid axles are dead.
Okay, so as a business case, you have to look at the way they look at the return on their investment.
The business case is working like a dream. Jeep is printing money, dude. They're selling.
That's exactly it.
Why would you mess with that? Do not put. You know, the inside story is that they had to work really hard to get solid axles on this on the JL.
Yeah, I know. And especially with the front axle.
Right. I think the solid axles are gone. I think it's independent from now on, which is going to make it a lot harder to lift. You know, because the French are going to be like, oh, this technology from the Ice Age, right? Which it
I'm
is.
Not going to put the French down on this one, though, because I'm going to give them a little bit of time. I'm going to give them one full year, pretty much from the time
they're known for cost cutting.
They're known for cost cutting, but they're also known for profit. And Peugeot,
because of their cost cutting.
Well, yeah, but PSA has managed to build some pretty damn good vehicles that are well regarded overseas. So if they can do that while cutting costs, maybe they can do that.
That is my
here.
Smirk of like, name one or two of them.
Well,
name two iconic PSA vehicles. Right? Yeah. Once upon a time, actually,
GTI.
They used to build like pretty cool off-roaders. Once upon a time, when they were
upon a time, they're winning Dakar.
But Peugeot has kind of gone and built a whole bunch of mediocre, you know.
No, I disagree. The vehicles that they have for the European market are doing extremely well, and they have excellent design, amazing
and that's,
interiors.
That's, you bring up another good point, Nathan, and that is Europe and America are so different. So let's talk about a couple numbers, right?
Right.
In America, electric car adoption is less than 2%, 1.7.
Yeah, it's significantly higher.
In Europe, it's like 50%.
Yeah, and they're moving really fast towards that.
Especially,
but that's the point.
In like, you know, Sweden and Norway. So why? Why is that?
Because Europeans are smarter than Americans?
No, because Europeans don't live in the Wild West where you can drive, you know, 1,000 miles and make two turns and have nothing but desert and sand, right?
Right.
There's just a very urban, very much more kind of tightly packed, much more centralized living space. So there are chargers everywhere, there are cities everywhere, right? We have a much bigger open country, and electric cars just aren't as compliant to that need, right? You can go in the middle of Wyoming and not find a charger for 300 miles.
Yeah, but nobody lives in Wyoming. The thing is that...
but they do live in... Yeah, same thing for Montana, South Dakota, North Dakota, Utah,
Mexico. Here, look. In major cities, electrification makes sense, but there's a problem. Major cities usually have apartments, and how many charges are you going to get per apartment complex? Oh, no. There are so many issues like that have to be sourced and are sussed out, and unfortunately, we just aren't there yet. But yes, the European cycle is very different than the American cycle. However, you can have a cut between plug-in hybrids, which can do long distance, and full-blown EVs. Now imagine a household that has one plug-in hybrid and one EV. They'd be able to get the best of both worlds. Am I correct?
Yes, potential.
So if PSA comes in, if Stellantis, and they say, listen, we need to make a lot of these vehicles plug-in hybrids, I don't think that's going to be horrible. And I also don't think they're going to go after Jeep with, you know, they're going to see that it's getting such a good return on their investment that I think they're going to leave them alone at first.
Already you've seen the dismantling of SRT.
And I was SRT though. SRT is different.
But that's SRT is like the big V8. You know,
that's exactly it.
But that's what people love about.
But we know that the big V8's going away. Everybody's getting rid of
them. If you want like the modern tech, coolest, newest stuff, right? You're going to go with Tesla. So you're not going to get that from...
I'm not going with Tesla. I would never own a Tesla.
But you see what I'm saying, right? You see what I'm saying? That's where you're going to go. But you're not going to go to Dodge for that. You're going to go for the big old hell-breathing, hell...
For now. But how many vehicles are Dodge selling? Not a lot. They're doing okay with some of their big displacement engines. But here's what's important here. Is the fact that these vehicles, the ones that you're talking about, the big V8s, other than pickup trucks, and that's a whole different story, it's a different podcast, other than those trucks, American vehicles, cars, that have big V8s, sports cars and all that, they're being condensed.
So I was reading an article about, Tim Kuniskis, who runs Dodge.
Yeah.
And he was talking, I think he was on Jalopnik, he was talking about like how they haven't dismantled SRT, but how they've just moved the engineers in. And I was just like, at the end I was like...
It means that they didn't fire them.
I was just like, they dismantled it. I mean, the takeaway message was it's gone.
And it's gone.
Yeah, it's gone, yeah.
But the thing about...
And that's the start of it, dude.
What's important to keep...
Front-wheel drive Wrangler, 2 years from now.
I disagree. So he and I, now we're on a Know You're Wrong, which is a totally different video series. But at the end of the day, and let's go right back to what the topic is, you drove what is an off-road, very off-road capable, partially electric vehicle that has, in theory, really good range, has a low carbon footprint, and isn't as ridiculously expensive as some of its brethren. Am I correct?
I drove right now what is the only electric off-roader that you can buy, from a major manufacturer. Right?
That's semi-electric.
There's nothing else. Yeah, semi. But you can drive all, you can go 20 miles.
Well, that's what I was asking, if you could actually go off-roading.
I was trying to think, is there anything else that you can take that's electric?
No, the Mitsubishi doesn't do off-roading really anymore. And I don't really think Volvo's very
It's Sirius, right? It's the only
Sirius
with a low range, right?
That
you can go.
So the future's not that bleak if this thing works.
But this was this time before, long before Stellantis even, was.
Yeah, well, this is what's important for Stellantis. Because they're coming in with a green footprint and they want to be green, they're seeing that Jeep is serious about it. And really important, we posted a video recently, I think on TFL Now, where we caught wind and saw on video a Jeep Grand Cherokee prototype running around, most likely with a very similar type of powertrain, because it made no noise as it was exiting the parking lot. It was running on batteries. That's almost guaranteed you were there.
Yeah.
So that means that they're working hard on this. That also means that these vehicles hopefully will be as capable off-road, but more efficient, which is what they desperately need.
Yeah, I hope you're right. I hope that we're not seeing the end of, the Jeep as we know it, but the beginning the beginning of a new, chapter in the life of the Wrangler. And more importantly, in the life of Ram, right? That's another brand that's, killing it right now.
Yeah, they're doing real. They're absolutely on fire, and we could see this powertrain go to Rams.
Because let's face it, Nathan. We've been around for 10 years now, 11 years now, right?
11.
And we saw the introduction of all the European brands. And, when it first was announced that, Alfa Romeo was coming to America, Fiat was coming to America, right? We were super excited. Maserati. Mm. And now those brands are hanging on by, their...
Yeah, Alfa's actually going through some huge changes. By the way, I will still say that the Stelvio is still one of the best driving crossovers I've ever driven.
Right, but they're not exactly
They never sold well.
Yeah. And Fiat came in here with a reputation of fix it again, Tony.
And unfortunately...
Yeah, fix it again.
Yeah. So as awesome as they were in some ways, it just didn't catch on with the American public. If you could buy a Fiat, but then you could buy a Toyota, you're going to buy the Toyota.
Because the products weren't... I don't think it would have caught on, but they would have had to build more exciting, you know, more interesting, more
logical. I mean, look, they didn't have a four-door sedan or a crossover when everybody else was doing crossovers. Yeah, I know.
They're bringing in sedans, right?
Right. So they were behind the ball, and they just weren't able to catch up. Then they introduced the L. That was a horrible idea.
The one car that did catch on for a little bit was the 500 because it was cool.
Which is, by the way, their most reliable car.
But there was only so many people that wanted a 500.
Yeah, a little tiny car, which is, you know, the size of a phone booth. Yeah. That's something kids that used to go and make phone calls from. So going back to what Stellantis is bringing is, we really don't know. And we're a little concerned. I will admit I'm a little concerned as well, because I really don't want to see the end of really cool horsepower or really cool off-roading. However, with the introduction of this vehicle, the 4xe, which I think is going to give a nice 5-year lifespan.
All right, let me ask you this. We'll leave it on this one. We're almost out of time. Mm-hmm. Out of the different Wrangler models, which one would you buy?
The V6 with the manual transmission.
Me too.
Yeah. I absolutely love it. I adore that setup. I like the manual setup.
You know what I would get?
But I would get the, the Gladiator.
You know what I want to get right now? Huh. We might actually end up getting this. Huh. I want to get the least expensive Wrangler you can get. I want to get the V6.
So probably under the Willys.
The V6, two-door, manual, with only potentially two options. You know what those two options are?
Air conditioning?
Yes, very good. That's right, air conditioning.
And maybe the hard top?
No. Okay. I like the soft top.
Okay.
Off-road tires. So that's a base, two-door.
So that's going to be $34,000?
No. God, no, that's barely $29,000.
It's 29?
Yeah, I want to say it's 27 for the base, and then you add air conditioning, and it's like 1,200, and the tires are like 200.
Okay, so I never looked at the two-door.
Well under 30.
Okay, so one of the least expensive Jeep Wranglers that we can get.
Everything you need and nothing you don't.
Yeah.
And I don't even care about like all the lockers and stuff, because you know what?
Is it a limited slip rear?
You can get that. I think it's an option. It's an option, but I was talking to the Wrangler brand manager, and he said you don't really need it. Because look, dude, unless you're really going like seriously rock crawling, the regular four-wheel drive system in a Wrangler is plenty good.
Oh, yeah. And the thing is that a lot of people
90%
from Jeep and from old FCA swore by having open diffs and how much fun it was scampering over rocks trying to figure it out.
Look, you've got the ground clearance. You've got the protection, right? They all come with protection. So.
Yeah, and you have the really good numbers in terms of approach and departure.
Departure angle. You don't really need all that stuff unless you're going to be doing like the Rubicon Trail. Great. And we've been doing a lot of that. So I just want to go back to basics, back to an inexpensive, affordable, everything you need, nothing you don't
write. So one-third the price of the trucks that we've recently bought.
Yes, exactly.
Basically.
Right.
Yeah. I'm down with that, because you're going to let me take it over to Fins and Things. And wipe out Hill.
Yeah. Well, if I don't buy it, Tommy wants to buy it. So
potato salad.
Dad won't do potato salad.
Potato salad. Yeah. I'll do that before Tommy buys it.
We won't do potato salad.
Well, guys, this has been fun. And I'm a little disappointed with Roman's bleak point of view of the future.
Look, I've been doing this for too long. You know, my editor used to say, when you go from being skeptical to cynical, maybe you should leave. I'm being cynical. But I'm just trying to be, you know, my skeptical self. And I hope I'm proven wrong. You know, the guys, you know, FCA and... Now Stellantis has always been known for, I think, out of the three domestic brands, right? Ford, GM, and these guys, they've been known for doing the most with the least.
Yeah, they managed to really stretch it out and make it work with a lot of different, especially Jeep and Ram.
Yeah, so those guys have always been the underdogs. I think that's their kind of thing in Detroit. Mm. And that attitude runs deep in the company. And so I think, you know, you don't just, we don't know. I mean, I'm just speculating here. It could be that Stellantis is going to come in and say, you guys keep going. Don't even.
Yeah, here's an injection of another $1 billion.
Exactly. I hope that. And go
that
do
would
it.
Be fantastic.
Yeah. We're not going to suck money out of this to build more Peugeots. I hope that's what happens.
Yeah, I hope so too.
Let's face it, the American market is so much bigger than the French market.
Oh, God, yeah. Well, it's not just the French sells a European market,
but still,
Russia and everything else. But what they want, they really want our market. And they're not bringing Peugeots to the States. By the way, they announced that Peugeot will not be here. However, brand sharing, engineering sharing, all that stuff will be happening in the near future. That's going to happen. My point is, I'm not going to yell at the kids to get off the lawn. I'm not Roman.
you know what was one of the most remarkable off-roaders?
What?
That wasn't an off-roader? The Peugeot 405.
Yeah?
That conquered Africa, dude.
Well, yeah, it was slightly modified, but yeah, but they did rallying. Peugeot did rallying with Paris-Dakar from day one, they've done very well. They've won several.
Morocco, you go to North Africa, 405s, all in that.
Oh my God, yeah, yeah, big wagons, they strap stuff down. I remember I was in Egypt, and they had this beat up wagon. And they strapped about 300 pounds worth of stuff on top. They had five passengers inside, and they were towing like this weird water tote.
So Peugeot does have a heritage of, you know, especially because French colonialized a lot of North Africa, right? So yeah. There's a lot of off-roading there. The Dakar is, of course, French. So, so you know, hopefully that spirit of the desert will live on.
Okay, I'm going to say one thing before we close. I think one of the reasons why Roman and I are both a little scared is because we feel perhaps that Renault kind of hurt Nissan, and we're worried that Peugeot could hurt FCA.
It's a good point.
I think we're right about that, too.
Yeah, the Renault, I mean, I don't know if it was Carlos Ghosn or if it was Renault.
I think it's a little bit of both.
Well, it did not, you know, Nissan has, over the last 10 years, become kind of, in a lot of ways, a shadow of its former self.
Yeah, they were directly competitive with Toyota, and now they're not.
You know, we've got a GTR parked over here.
Yeah.
Think about this, Nathan, and Tommy made this point, and he's absolutely right? The GTR came in 2007, and it blew, I remember the Fast and Furious, it was the in car, right?
Yeah.
0-60, 2.9 seconds, everybody lusted after it. You know, it drew so much traffic into Nissan dealerships. The dealers were happy. The fans were happy. You know, kids put that thing up on the wall.
Yeah,
it's beautiful. And then for 14 years.
They haven't touched it.
Imagine if they had like in 2000, let's say 10 or 12, had made it all electric and just blown the doors off of Tesla. What conversation would we be having now?
It would be a very different conversation, but we go back to the thing that...
Instead of the Leaf, and I know you have a Leaf, but...
That is a common car, and that was going all the way. That was his deal.
Right, but actually,
it's a cheap car.
Cheap, yeah, exactly. And, you know, and somehow Nissan decided that they were going to concentrate on Versas, and, you know, for a long time, they had the least expensive car in America, which I wouldn't be particularly proud of. I mean, it's saying that the brand
and
is...
And the Jatco CVT... really hurt their reputation.
Yeah, and they keep pushing. You know, it's like the we don't want to get into the whole Nissan thing,
No.
I mean the cacophony of people who hate CVTs in America is beyond loud,
and it's growing substantially.
And they just keep slamming them into the vehicles.
Yeah, although they have been approved. Bottom line here is that we're concerned about the changes, but the good news on my side of this is that I think that this 4xe might point the way to the future.
I hope you're right.
And the future could be good because this thing is just as off-road capable or nearly as off-road capable as a regular.
And I love your case that you've got a buddy who, you know, I could see that. I think there are people who will buy this thing.
Yep.
And I think, you know, they will enjoy listening to, you know, the great outdoors instead of the roar of their...
the roar of the engine and also a little bit of a badge of honor.
Yeah,
So what do you drive? Well, this is what I have.
Yeah, you know, you can pull that thing up next to a Prius and with pride to give them...
Just kind of give them a little wink.
A green snicker.
Yeah, but you'd be surprised how many people will pay for that.
Yeah.
So bottom line is that I think that this is a really slick vehicle. I'm looking forward to us getting one, perhaps for a decent time so we can test it in Colorado.
But I still want to buy the base.
I get you. Yeah.
All right. Roll up windows, dude.
Roll up windows. Man, it's been a while.
Hey, on that cheap truck, you had the only... No, I had power windows. You had power.
We
had roll up, yeah.
Yeah, and it worked, too. It kind of...
They kind of worked.
I kind of had to help it along a little bit. But it worked just fine. Everything was fine.
All right, guys. Thanks for joining us. And once again, if you're watching on YouTube and you want to subscribe to a podcast or listen to this while you're driving, TFL Talk is available at all of our favorite podcast places like iTunes, Pandora, you name it. We're there.
Yeah, it's... We have an unedited version, too. No, we don't.
No, we don't.
I want to do that one day.
No, that'd be great.
All right, guys. All right. Catch you later.
Bye.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.